Hi all, and welcome to the Truth and Integrity Show. And I'm delighted to have John and Gerard and Carl on today. And we're going to be getting all kinds of updates of what's going on at National Liberty Alliance. We've kind of run concurrent with this group of people. Of course, previously we were with Cosmic Voice, and we're delighted to have them here on THI as well. So, hi John, hi Carl, and hi Gerard.
How you doing, Thomas? Good to hear from you again, and thanks for having us on again. Gerard hasn't connected yet, but I'm sure he'll connect as soon as he sees the call on his computer.
Yeah, well, we've been running side by side. Originally with Cosmic Voice and Drake, and it's developed since then. You know, are you seeing an increased interest in the common law, and how's it going forward?
Well, yeah, we're up to about 7,000 members now on nationallibertyalliance.org, and, you know, we're continuing to grow. We're hoping to hit that critical mass soon where, you know, the bubble sort of pops and we really start to get enough people behind us to really get some things really done. We're preparing to go into the federal courts now. Matter of fact, we're writing the papers now. I don't know how much long it's going to take to write, maybe another week or two, but once we get it all written up, we're going to file it up in the Northern District, probably. And we're going after, ultimately, the judiciary, the federal judiciary, which has hidden the courts of justice from us. And we've discovered exactly how they've done that. We're going to lay that out in the case. And we also realized in this process that we also have to sue or go up against the United States Supreme Court, because they know that the fraud is going on and they're silent to it. Now I'm sure there's, you know, they kind of got a gun to their head, so to speak, and they got problems. But it's time for them to step up and get behind the people and stop resisting the people from their courts of justice. So we're also realized that this whole thing is being perpetrated and taught and controlled by the bar. So we're going to be suing the Bar Association. And we also realize in this case, we're going to have to also sue the judiciary committees in both houses, Senate and the Congress. And so that's what we're preparing right now. It's a big case. And this is the case that I think, we've been building towards this case, and I think we have enough knowledge to really be able to make this battle and make our position pretty clear, even for the common person who would just pay attention. They would understand this whole process and what's going on and how they robbed us and how we could take it back.
Yes, I agree. We have the knowledge of what goes on with the Bar Association and what it all stands for. Can you give a brief description to new listeners? I think it would be useful why we don't need the Bar Association.
Well, you know, the bar in itself it originally doesn't really have a bad meaning to it. You know, even Jefferson and our founding fathers, who did become lawyers, not under the Bar Association or anything, but they had to meet the bar requirements, which is really a level of requirements required by the courts in order to get in there and make arguments within the courts. And I personally don't have a problem with that. It's the Bar Association that has taken control of this whole process. In this case, it's the American Bar Association. Prior to that, it came out of England. It was the English Bar Association, or British, I think they call it the British Association. And
British accreditation, yeah.
Right. You know, in the Constitution, and we have really grown a lot in knowledge and understanding of the law, how things work, the structure of the law, the courts, and so on. And one of the things that we have to realize is, even though statutes are not law to be applied upon the people, statutes are law to be applied upon the bureaucrat, particularly the elected individual, the appointed individual, and so on, and even just the employed individual. And that's the purpose of statutes. It's a process of regulations. And when they come in and they're empowered with a certain amount of power, they fall under certain legal possibilities. For instance, if they act under the color of law, and then they can be there is a jail sentence that's applied against those individuals. And also a fine. And Congress had written that up, and you'll find that in U.S. 18, United States Code, Title 18. And so they can apply those titles or those statutes within those jurisdictions. And that's the key thing. There are 57 USC titles. So therefore, there are 57 jurisdictions. And of those 57 jurisdictions, only 27 of them are actually brought into law. And the other 30 are really run as regulations, you know, policies and procedures, how particular agencies might run. So when you come into courts like that, which maybe you're dealing with bankruptcy, or maybe you're dealing with the armed forces, the military, or you're dealing with, numerous things. Like I said, there's 57 different titles. Those statutes are important for us to have. We've given Congress the authority to write those statutes for that purpose, to be applied within those jurisdictions. And that's what the way the rules and the regulations that these people who we've empowered have got to operate under. And so for those kind of courts, we do need people who are trained to be able to understand a particular, base of law, whichever it may be. Again, maybe it's bankruptcy, and they should be educated in that process. But as far as the courts concerning we the people, which could fall under either equity or law, and all courts fall under one of those two, including the statutory courts. Equity is a process of statutes that you might work under, which controls the court, or it may be a contract between two people or more, and that controls that particular court, the jurisdiction of that court. But as far as criminal court is concerned, or even civil courts where the people are involved, if they don't want to apply a particular, process of law, a contract of some kind, for instance, which would control the court through a judge, they can come into the common law court and request a jury. And anything over $20 in a civil court, you can get a jury, a trial by jury. And all criminal courts must be a trial by jury. And those are the courts that must operate under natural law, also known as common law. They cannot bring their statutes and require any kind of a statutory process or any kind of a penalty statutory against an individual in those courts.
Yeah, yes, I agree. Statutes and regulations and all these terminologies is all to do with the legalese and
yeah,
that
but
form
remember,
of law. It's corporate law, isn't it?
Yeah, here is the problem. I've looked at all of the different codes to see what kind of jurisdictions, and I haven't found too much fault with it, except for when you get to two of the codes, one under title USC 18 and the other one's 26. Now, 18 is where the penal code is found, and what's very surprising that people, and I'm surprised lawyers don't bring this up, or I don't understand. I mean, they got to understand. Well, maybe they just don't know. Maybe they don't look. But the jurisdiction of US 18 is maritime law. So we don't fall under that jurisdiction. Yet they are using those penal codes in the federal courts against the people. And that's the battle. Yeah. The other thing, of course, is what they call the tax courts, which is under USC 26, which refers to itself as a court of record. Now, USC 26 was enacted law, but the same day it was enacted law, it was also deactivated. So its activation was removed. So they don't have no lawful authority. They don't have it can't be called law. And again, we're going to be making the cases against US 18 and US 26 in our court case. And this is how they've defrauded the people. And again, the people need to understand these ideas or these understandings of these laws, how they work and what a natural law court is all about, which is also called a court of record. And they have to learn about these things if they want to be free. Otherwise, they'll continue to pull the wool over our eyes.
Yeah, I agree. The maritime law you touched on has been quite heavily against we the people. And it's about, taking our own responsibility. We talk about this in the regular shows, taking our own responsibility. And the one thing we have to learn is knowledge, because we're sadly lacking in it. And yes, we all know it's a kind of a minefield with law, and how it's operated and how it's worded, and you know, it's all designed to, as you said, cover our eyes so we can't see, and that's a deliberate ploy. Mm-hmm. You know, credit to your group that you've been not only telling people what this is how it is, but giving them the opportunity to learn the knowledge themselves, because you have that all on your website, don't you?
Well, it's interesting on how they did these things. And, you know, we got to go back to Jefferson and take the wisdom that he has given us. And, of course, he was under the influence of many great men in history, because he was, a ferocious reader. And he had said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. We really need to understand that, because I'd say at least the past 50 years, probably more, but at least 50 years, actually it goes back a lot further than that. They've been working to keep us ignorant. The powers that be, the New World Order, the bankers and so on, they've seized control of our education, they seized control of our entertainment and the news media and so on. And so they have been giving us a lot of propaganda and keeping us ignorant to the law, ignorant to the Constitution, ignorant to the Bill of Rights, ignorant to natural law, common law, totally ignorant. So we have no understanding or knowledge of these things. So if we don't understand these things, how can we defend them? How can we fight to get them back? And that's the key. You know, our founding fathers have provided for us processes on how we can have government by consent. And it starts with the Constitution. We're covering this right now. We are writing another course. It's taken a lot longer than I thought, because we've got so much work to do. But we are writing a course that's going to cover all these things we're talking about today. And I'm also writing a book. I'll put this into a book form, which will probably be much more in-depth even than the course. But hopefully we'll be releasing the course, you know, maybe in a month, maybe less. I don't know. But again, we're working diligently to get it done. But what people need to understand is how to consent to government. And it starts with the Constitution and the application of that Constitution. As Jefferson said, bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. Well, if we don't know the Constitution, which is a very thin, small book, it's only about 4,000, 5,000 words to the whole thing, and it doesn't take much to really understand the Constitution and to be able to apply it. But it does take energy and time to learn these things. And if people aren't willing to really come and learn about the Constitution and understand how we can use it to bind them down, to chain them down. For instance, they've only got 18, Congress has 18 powers. And of those 18 powers, one of those powers is the power to write law on the other 17. And those 17 powers define what Congress can write laws within. And therein is U.S. title, the U.S. titles. Now, of course, they've abused us through the two titles, 18 and 26. And we need to understand how they've done that. And so that's one way, by holding their feet to the fire, understanding what their authority is, that's one way to consent to government. The other way to consent, there's two other ways to consent to government, and we're teaching all three, actually. But the second one is really taking control of the jury process. If we, the people, can take control of the jury process and get rid of the fox that's, guarding the hen house, so to speak, and that would be the judge and or the prosecutor, and it comes into the hands of the people, then we can hear the complaints of the people. We can bring into the court and solve the problems of the complaints of the people. We can remove people from office by indicting them. But we have to be an unchained, an untainted jury. And again, that's what we're doing. We're building administrations across the United States in every single county. We've got 3,134 counties. We need four people for each one of those counties. Right now, we have a little over 1,000 people who have signed up to become administrators, which is a paid position. You know, people will be paid a good salary in this. And of course, that's all comes from the counties and the state and even the federal government for some degree to cover those salary costs. And we figured out how all that works also. But anyway, the people need to take control, and we need to be able to do the orientation of the grand jury and the trial jury. We need to prevent the abuse of the people in the grand jury from the prosecutor. And we need to protect the trial jury from the abuse of the judge. And so if we don't take control of that, and that's why we don't have control. If we did take control of that, we would indeed have government by consent, because we can indict them when they don't obey and behave and be in good behavior, as the Constitution puts it. Now, the other one, which we're not going to get too deep into, is what's called the committeeman process. And I think we spoke a little bit about that maybe. But the committeeman process came out of what was called the Committee of Safety. And the Committee of Safety came up in before 1776. And that was the process that our founding fathers used to bring together this nation and to be able to write the Constitution and debate it and bring it to play in 1789 when George Washington became the president. And when that happened, the committees of safety warped into what is called the committeemen. And the committeemen are the people who decide who's going to be on the tickets, whether it's the criminal on the right in these days or the criminal on the left these days. We need to take control and prevent the criminals from coming in. We need to take control of that system and require that they know and understand the Constitution. And how can we require them to know and understand it if we don't? So we have to learn these things. And that's what National Liberty Alliance is all about. We're there to facilitate an education in this process, to show the people how to become the consenters of this government and to understand the Constitution, the law of the land, and to some degree the titles or at least their proper places. And until the people are able to do that, we're not going to be able to win this battle. Even though, we have Trump, who has taken down the deep state, and a lot of other people working with him. He's got military and many, many people to take the deep state down. But once it's down, there's going to be a void for power. And it's either going to be filled with these people again or some other evil group that controls everybody, or it's going to be the people. The things we're doing is we're teaching the people to fill that void. They must learn to do it. Otherwise, we're not going to be free.
Now, I say this in our show. I often put up things, Carl will know, things to ponder. The cabal stepped down tonight. What happens next? And most people say, but party, and that's fine. But what happens next? Mm-hmm. We've already aware that most of the politicians, the 500 and so, are either corrupt or corrupted. I think even the unawake people can see that now, given the number of resignations, which is a fancy term for being fired. And there will be quite a number coming up in the next week or so, from what I hear. But, it's all right saying, well, let's get rid of all 500 or all 400 or all 300 politicians because they're corrupt. But are we the people going to step in and make them changes, or are we just going to replicate what they've done previously?
Well, that's the question. Who are we going to fill these offices with? And how do we know what the requirements and the understanding and the knowledge of these people that we bring to fill these offices, how do we know that they know the Constitution? People need to understand how to get power and how to get authority. And that's what National Liberty Alliance is all about. We're trying to teach the people on how to have the authority, how to take control of our destiny as a people. And again, we do this by taking control of the political process, and we take control of the judicial process, and of course the law itself, and requiring the law to be obeyed, which is the Constitution. So therein is the three ways that we can take consent of our government. And for an example, I was a committeeman for a while, and in New York there were very few elected committeemen, and I was one of the very few elected committeemen. We never were able to seize the power, but we did do a lot of things, good works, preparatory towards the future for changing the laws. We had a convention and so on. But let me explain the power of the committeemen. Nobody gets into office without going through the committeemen, and they kiss the butts of these committeemen, especially the chairman, the chairperson. If any politician gets a call from the chairperson, that is in within one of their election districts, they usually county, of course, they're going to respond immediately. And anything that the chairman requires of them as a politician, they're going to obey and do. Why is that? Because they hold the future of these politicians in the hands of either supporting them or not supporting them. And if they don't support them, they're not getting into office. They're not going to get onto the party ticket. And that's where we, the people, have to take control and make sure these people know the Constitution, apply the Constitution, and understand that we, being the committee men, have the power of recall. Then we need no law to tell us what we can do here. The power of recall is the ability for the committee men to go out and get together and decide this guy's not obeying the law. They're not listening to us. He's a problem. Let's get rid of him. So we walk our districts, get the necessary signatures for recall, and pull him out of office. And that's a fear we need to put upon these people. And that's a knowledge we need to know how to apply. And that's what we're going to be teaching people.
That sounds good. The one word that springs to mind, accountability, because this is our problem right across the board, not only in the legal system or the law system. It's politicians not being accountable, it's corporations not being accountable, it's banks not being accountable, and be it ordinary bank or central banks. NASA's not accountable, and nobody's accountable anymore. And of course, you just override everybody with the regulations and statutes that stands outside of natural law,
And again,
rides roughshod.
those statutes and regulations need to be applied towards them, because that's what it was written for, to control them, not we the people. And people, again, if the people don't have this knowledge and understanding, if they don't learn now and be prepared to take these positions or support the people to take these positions, or just be educated for the process of being an educated individual to sit on a grand jury or a trial jury, or even run for a committee man from time to time. Everyone should run for committee man once in their life. It's a 2-year process, 2-year election position. It doesn't get You don't get paid for it, but you have the ability to take control of who's getting into office. And I would guess maybe you probably put in about 40 hours a year. It's usually most of your time is around the election time, but that's about it. You don't have to apply a lot of time into this position, but you're the people who get together to decide and interview people who want to get onto a political ticket. You get to quiz them and ask them questions and make sure they understand the Constitution. And if they don't, well, send them to National Liberty Alliance, tell them go learn, and then come back. We'll talk to you again. But if they don't know the Constitution and they don't understand the authorities that they have and the authority that they don't have, and we don't want to put these people into office. We need people who are going to obey the Constitution. And I'm really happy to hear a lot of things that are going on in Washington with Trump and many of the people that he has brought together and empowered. And they are talking about the rule of law. And they're not going to apply. And I've seen them listening to what they've been saying. I've come to realize they're not going to let anyone get away with this. Obama is going to go to jail, maybe even worse, of course. And so is Hillary Clinton and many, many others, people we would never think. He's not going to go halfway to obey the law and not obey the law the rest of the way. That's not what these people are about. That's not what they're going to do. They're going to apply the law. And wherever the hammer falls, the hammer falls. Justice
That's
must
it.
prevail.
Yes, absolutely. It's way past time. The depths of I'm getting tired of testimonies and hearings and investigations. They've been given Trump's been given by our team the files of all the criminality. So there's no need for investigations, because yes, you could say, well, they're entitled to procedure, but I think these people have gone way beyond procedure, and they think they're beyond all everybody else, full
Exactly.
on immunity, and that's must change. But it was interesting what you were saying about the committee man. I've had a bit of an education there on that. So in essence, with the committee man, the way I'm viewing it, is the people's level. So the people decide who their politician or senator or governor is, rather than CNN or Fox,
right?
And how much money and the lobbyist people, you know?
Right. Right now, the committeeman process has been taken over by the powers that be. It's a top-down process, and we need to take it back. And again, that's where we started. We started it, this battle, of course, with you know, the Tea Party movement and all the other liberty movements, and then we moved over and took that further to become committeemen. And when we got into the committeemen, we discovered all of the problems there. There was a lot of things going on that was unlawful, and everything is totally under control. We also found out that committeemen think that they're elected, but they're not. And that plays into our hands a lot better, because it'll be very easy to take over. You know, one person literally can take over the county, and I can even go and say one person literally can take over the state. If there's only one elected committeeman, then that's the person who gets to appoint everyone. And, of course, we need to teach people, so we have many, many, many elected. We want all of the committeemen to be elected. And if, as long as the people overwhelm the process, the evil coming in will be suppressed. But we have to have knowledge. We have to know when Congress is out there making laws where they don't have authority. We have to know and understand when an individual is elected for this office or that office is breaking the law by, you know, coming outside of their jurisdiction and applying forces and things upon people or whatever for their own benefit. We have to know when they're doing that. And the only way you can know that is by knowing the Constitution. We must know the Constitution. And we do have a constitutional course. It's a simple course. We're putting a much more complex course together, which will cover the Constitution, the laws of the land. I mean, really get deeply involved. But we do have a constitutional course. It's free. Come on to nationallibertyalliance.org and just sign up for the course. We also have a civics course, which is about 120 hours long. There's a lot of video and audio and then some quizzing at the ends of each of these things. But when you get through that, people will then understand exactly how America got to where we're at. And they'll also come to an understanding on what we need to do to get back to where we need to be. Also learn a lot about history, you know, the founding fathers and so on. But this third course we're putting together is going to be really a course that's going to get very involved with people to have an understanding of how the court system works, the law, how the law works, what is the law, what is positive law, what is natural law, what's the difference between the two, what is equity, and the difference between equity and law. These things are important to understand. I've talked with lawyers, I've listened to people who speak on these issues, and as I listen very carefully to them and people ask questions, I come to understand very few people understand the difference between equity and law. And so we've done a lot of research in the difference between the two, and we've come to a realization and an understanding of what that is and how we can use these to our advantage, of course, which is what we the people need to do. But again, we the people can take 100%, let me repeat that, we the people can take 100% back of consent of government if we get involved with one of these three things. You know, ultimately, knowledge. Everyone should have knowledge, okay? That's where it all starts, to be able to understand what's going on and get behind the people that are actually doing the things, that are trying to bring things back to what is right. The other thing is getting involved by becoming an administrator for the grand juries and the trial juries to orientate them and train and prepare them. You have about eight hours to prepare the people, and you don't need more than that to come in and sit as a grand jurist or a trial jurist. The other thing is for people to respond when they're called to become jurist or grand jurist. Now, sometimes these things are abused. We need to change that. I mean, first of all, they only give them $60 a day. We need to change that big time because we should be spending the money where we really should be spending the money, which is in our judicial system and in our political system, and taking control of those two systems. But anyway, we need to respond to the call when you're called for a grand jury or trial jury. We need to stop the abuse of the people where people are pulled in to sit on a grand jury. They may be pulled in for 6 months or a year. That is uncalled for. It's wrong. We cannot do that. We can't require people to come. And that's why a lot of people try to escape that system, because they don't have the time, especially entrepreneurs. And the other side, the other thing is taking back the political process, totally 100% deciding who gets into office and removing those people that we that are breaking the law, that are in bad behavior, removing them from office and replacing them with people who are statesmen. That we take control through the committeemen. Therein is consent of government, 100% control of our government by we the people. But we the people need to understand the process, gather the knowledge of what law is, how the court system works, and be able to deal with these problems and make sure we get people coming into office who are statesmen and also understand the Constitution. So if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. And Jefferson said, if we don't keep up on the education of the people, we can and could, and we already have, lose our liberties in one generation. One generation is all it takes, and we've lost it all. And that's where we're at. We're at that point. Either we're going to take it back, or we're going to be lazy and let it go.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a common theme through our show about personal responsibility. You know, we're asking for freedom, but people won't take the time to not only learn different subjects, but get involved in due process, you know. And we can't just expect to have freedom when we've handed over our power and our energy over to people who are going to abuse it. They have abused it, and they will continue abusing it whilst we allow them to run our lives. If we keep asking other people to run your life for you, whether it be on the education system, a political level, justice level, it's going to get abused, and it has been abused badly, and we have lost so much. And the key thing is, as John says, knowledge. Gain knowledge. It doesn't matter what subject you're interested in, you must gain knowledge. Without that, we're blind. And essentially, we've got a whole nation in America who are walking around largely blind.
Well, you know, ignorance is what is necessary for these people to take and maintain control. You know, I listened to people, for instance, I was listening to some individual who was upset because Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, but Trump won 30 of the states. They don't understand how the president is chosen. And the president needs to be chosen by the states. That's where the authority has to come. And the legislators of those states need to have some power and authority as much as the people. Because, you know, ultimately the president is the president of the United States. It's that political level. And that's why the process, and there's other reasons, and that's why the process of electing a president is different than, you know, how we may elect someone democratically, you know, by popular vote. And this is part of the balance of power. And by studying the Constitution and understanding how things work and how the balance of power works, then you'll come to an understanding on why we use the process we use to elect the president. I mean, take the 17th Amendment, which destroyed the balance of power by removing the authority and the, you know, the election of senators by the states. You know, look at, there were two houses. And this was the big battle. This was the big discussion. This is what the constitutional conversation was all about, the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers. If you go listen, it's the debate of the balance of power. And the people have to have power, but the states have to have power. And we give them special authorities and powers, but in that we also give them a lot of responsibility they're going to be held accountable for. And when they're asked a question from the people, they must answer. Matter of fact, the United States Supreme Court has ruled numerous times that, you know, silence when you have a duty to speak is nothing short of fraud. It is fraud. So anybody elected must speak when asked, because they have to give an account of whatever it is that they're doing. And we have to understand all these things. So we need to take the power back through knowledge, and that's where it starts. If we don't accumulate the knowledge in order to understand these systems, to understand the law and how this all works, then we can't have liberty. You cannot have it. So they keep the slaves ignorant, so to speak. You go back into the 150, 200 years ago when we had slaves in this country, and one of the key, it was illegal, it was unlawful to teach a slave how to read and write because you have to keep them ignorant. You can't allow them to become knowledgeable. Well, we the people have become slaves. We become enslaved, and we must be kept ignorant. Therefore, they've taken control of our education. We don't get a civics course. We don't get constitutional courses. We don't understand the powers and the authorities of all of these different offices that people are elected to. And therefore, as long as we don't understand that, the wool can be pulled over our eyes, we have no clue, and we just fall deeper and deeper into slavery until we wake up and that iron fist is there or is closed or the boot is on our head.
Yeah, well, this is a problem we've co covered in the main shows. I work with the Manor World Holding Trust, and we issued sovereignty to America back in January. It's not been implemented yet. It is being looked at in depth. It will change everything. It will end the bar. It will end the Federal Reserve. It will end the US current currency, Federal Reserve note, and also the IRS, which will
Well,
be.
Trump is working on all that also, as I'm sure you know. So, yeah, we're going to achieve
Well,
that soon. I'm blown
yeah,
away by where we're at. I just can't believe that
he
what's
has
going on.
currently, apart from the threats of what's going on, which we're aware of, there's that much going on. In essence, it would have been nice if it was staggered, but everything's building to a critical, crucial point now, and I think people are feeling that tension. But the sovereignty ends the British rule, or the Crown rule rather than Britain, and it will change the legal system, or the back from legal into law. And so I'm hoping that when that is implemented, that your group and the other groups that are working with you, hopefully, will be ready to step in, because it has to be changed. We can't carry on the way we are.
Well,
But
absolutely.
what you would be staggered. One of the biggest things we've done from the trust point of view is teaching all the people in high positions, including the President of the United States. You'd be staggered at how little they really know of what's going on or what has gone on. And so this has been a good process over the last 4 or 5 years, where Kim and the others in the team have been talking to heads of state, talking to prime ministers, talking to presidents, and you'd be staggered at how little they know it
Oh,
all.
yeah.
The whole system is compartmentalized, and people think because you're the president of the United States, you should know everything. Well, you'd be amazed at how little all previous presidents knew. They got told what they need to know,
Again, you
and
got to
this.
keep the slaves ignorant.
Oh
That's the key.
yeah, and politicians are slaves as well,
That's right.
as are the military, and people think that they're at the top of the tree. No, and this is a constant ongoing process where we have to teach the police force that they're not observing the proper rules. We have to teach the military. Well, the US military is not even under American control, and work is ongoing to correct that and bring it back into American jurisdiction, for want of a better word. And the whole thing is a complete mess, and it's gonna require not just the politicians and not just the likes of John, and the lawyer people. It's gonna require everyone to make what will be the most extraordinary change in history, because we're basically doing a 180 on all layers of society, and
Well, absolutely. You look at we the people need to become organized. We need to be communicate, and we also need to be educated. And those are the three things National Liberty Alliance is all about. You know, there's a biblical principle concerning, you know, for instance, in the Bible with Christ and John the Baptist, where John the Baptist says that he must, that Christ must increase and he must decrease, because people were coming to him as a prophet. And that's kind of our motto that we've taken up at National Liberty Alliance. You know, National Liberty Alliance must decrease as the people increase. Until then, we need to give them the knowledge. They need to come and get schooled and come to the understanding of what they need to understand in order to become educated enough to stand up and take control of the process on the grassroots level. And they have to be unleashed. You cannot control that process. National Liberty Alliance will always be there for the purpose of educating. It will be an educational yeah. system mostly, and a place for people to communicate and organize. But the grassroots through the committee men and the grassroots through the administrations and of the grand juries and the trial juries, that's where the power has to be, and that's where the authority and the control of our government must take place. And each election district has a certain amount of authority of the different political subdivisions involved in, you know, wherever their election districts fall into. And then they take control, whether it's their congressman or the mayor or whatever, governor, and so on. And again, that's all part of the balance of power, which we've lost. We've lost that balance of the power. The people are no longer sovereign. I mean, we are, of course, sovereign under nature. You know,
yeah.
God created us, and we are, and we have to fight to take it back. But they have taken
yeah.
our sovereignty away, and we have been left as slaves, and we're just being pushed around. But the same thing has happened to the states, as I was talking about the 17th Amendment and the senators. They were to be elected by the states and controlled by the legislators of each state. If we didn't have the 17th Amendment, they would not be as far entrenched into our government as they are. They would not have been able to pull off a lot of the things that they pulled off, because the states a long time ago would have stopped this. I mean, I've seen the states trying to stop this, but they don't have power because they've lost. They're not sovereign anymore either. The reason they have no say on what the federal government does. They used to have say through the senators. And it is, you know, when the Congress comes up and makes a decision and makes a law, the Senate has to agree, yay or nay. So you have to have both houses to agree, and then you have to have a president willing to sign it into law. And that's the balance of power. Now, of course, if the president refuses to sign it in law, then both houses need to come up with two-thirds. And if they can come up with two-thirds, then they can overrule and force the president's signature and make it into law without his signature if he doesn't sign it in X amount of days. But when we go into the Constitution, for instance, in Article 5, it talks about consent. It says here without, let me read this, let's see where I'll start. That no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Now, the word suffrage identifies with an equal vote, okay? And that's where the power of the Senate or the power of the state comes in. It's in Article 1, Section 3, where we read, the Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state chosen by the legislature thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote. So we have two for each state, that's 100 senators, and they get to decide on the final line if they're going to permit a law to go through. And so if the people make a mistake, the state can fix it. If the state makes a mistake, the people can fix it. There'd be a conflict of interest or disagreement between the two, and one can prevent it from coming through, or the other one can prevent a law for something from going through. Like in New York State, for instance, it used to be where the governor would choose a potential senators and bring them up before the legislators to get them approved, just like we go through the process, for instance, with Judge Kavanaugh or any other Supreme Court judge or any federal officer. The president brings someone up, nominates them, and then the Congress debates and decides whether they're going to pass that person through or not. So there's got to be approval between the branches, at least the administrative and the legislative. Same thing in the state. And once the 17th Amendment, which, by the way, was never ratified, and we've got a paper we're going to apply into the court also showing proof of that. We've got all the hardcore evidence on this stuff. But once the the senators come into power through the states, you know, by the states. The 17th Amendment has taken that away. So the states are no longer sovereign. The states have no say on what the government does on the federal level, and they've taken total control from the states. The people have no power, no authority. They've lost the power of the committeemen. They've lost the power and the authority of the juries. They're statutorized or codified, whatever word you want to use there, and they're controlled as puppets. Every jury that I'm aware of is stacked. Once in a while, the jury gets wise enough to go against that process. But generally speaking, it's stacked. So the people have lost all control of their government. So the powers that be, the deep state, which we are rooting out right now, okay, that's what needs to come down and be taken out and prosecuted. But if we, the people, don't step up to fill that power void, we're only going to end up back here again. You know, President Trump can only do so much, but he can't take the place of the people. We must have government by the consent of the people. You must learn this process. And, you know, I know we're blowing our own horn here a little bit on what I'm going to say, but I'm not aware of any place, anywhere, where you can get the education that you can get at National Liberty Alliance. I don't know of any place else you can get it. I don't know of any place that is doing this properly, bringing the process of control of the juries. I don't know of anyone doing it properly. Every one of them goes back to someone controlling the whole system. Same thing with the committeemen or the political process. I don't know anybody that's doing it properly. But we do have all the information. We are teaching it. We're trying to organize the people in their own grassroots level to step up, take power in their own counties and eventually throughout the states, and take control again. Otherwise, give up our liberties, because if we don't control our own future and destiny by controlling our law and our political process, then we're giving it up to someone else who's going to control it for us, and we'll end up always back into slavery, because that's the nature of the hearts of men, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. And I also agree that your group appears to be the only one that's actually given people the tools to empower themselves and ultimately go on to empower the rest of the people and take their state or county or country back where we the people control it. You know, you can't control it allowing others to do it. You know, we've allowed them to control our food, where everything gets processed and we just buy it. When we used to be able to make our own, we had a discussion on this morning. You know, people were self-sufficient. Well, we have to go. We can't keep being lazy and handing over our power.
You know, if you go out and if you don't take care of yourself nutritional wise, your body is going to die. If you don't take care of yourself intellectually, by feeding it into, you know, the things necessary to perform that which is necessary for man to survive, which is liberty, you know, it's going to die. If you don't feed your soul spiritually, that's going to die. And so we have to feed this, and people need to understand that. And it all works together, body, soul, and spirit. It all works together. We have to take control. Look at. I've been in this for quite some time. I think it was 1999 is when I started in the Liberty Movement group. I started with We the People through Robert Schultz and then eventually, you know, the Ron Paul movement and the Tea Parties and so on. And so, but I've been in it since 1999. And what I have seen, I've come to realize with all the things that I came to understand that it's going to be almost impossible to take this nation back. I really didn't see a way to do it. Even with Ron Paul, I mean, he was only one person. You know, how could one you need a whole group of people. And no one saw this coming with Trump. I mean, you know, now we look back into the history of Trump and who he is and what he's been saying for many, many years and how he got involved in this and how he's working with the military intelligence to do this, because the military was ready to do a coup and they were going to do a coup against Obama. But they didn't know how the people would react. And I often wondered whether the military was going to do something. And if they did, would they be for us or would they be against us? Would this be part of the process, the cover story of saving the nation? So I always saw the danger there, and they did too, thankfully. And they discovered Trump and they approached him and he came and ran for office. And so he's not one person. There is a whole group of people throughout our government working to take these people out. And it's just,
Yeah,
to me,
the
it's like a miracle. I mean, who saw this? I mean, all of a sudden, one day, Trump runs for office, you get him in, and he's far better than we, that I thought, anyway. I knew he was intelligent. I knew he understood a lot of this stuff, but I didn't think he really understood as much as he does. But that's ignorant of me thinking that way when you realize the position that
Well,
he has had and the people he's been rubbing shoulders with.
he's had quite a learning curve, I can tell you that, and I
No
think
doubt, yeah.
the military have had quite a learning curve. The Pentagon have had quite a learning curve. You know,
Well,
what a
yeah,
lot
I don't,
of
you know
American.
Steve Bannon, don't you? Steve Bannon, he was
Yeah.
working with Trump to get him elected, and he was in
Yeah.
his administration, I think, for the first 9 months. I think he was the key individual to really bring Trump around. I mean, Trump knew a lot of things. He was educating himself on what was going on out west with the Finucane thing, and what was going on with stealing uranium and so on, and who was involved, blah 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 blah. Anyway, he was aware of that, and he was out there. He had a committee of people out there, and that's where we met. His group of people was out there, out west. People, membership of National Liberty Alliance, made the connection with us as the leadership with the Trump administration through around the corner, so to speak, not directly. And the request came. We shared paperwork with them, and the request came to see our paperwork as it's produced, and we've been doing so for over 2 years now. And so he's been seeing what we're doing before he became president, or as he was running for president. He was coming to an understanding, and hopefully we've taught him some things about the law. And this guy Steve Bannon really is was a key figure, in my opinion, on really bringing Trump the understanding of these things to Trump the right way. And that's how come Trump is so bold to say the things he says. I think it was Steve Bannon who pushed him to say, "Look, this is what you got to do. You got to get out and tell the people the truth." And he did. And he spoke about taking this country back and bringing it back to power to the people. And that's powerful.
Well, he mentions it after we sent him the Declaration of Sovereignty. He's mentioned that in most speeches, and people are seeing that now.
Yeah, he's
I don't
learning. He's
think
learning from all the groups, so there's no doubt
I
about
don't
it, and we're thankful for that.
I don't think he or many other people really understood the depth of that document, you know, and because literally it changes everything. And this is going to be quite a chaotic period for us all in many ways, because as we're learning, people assume that they know stuff, and sadly it's so far from the truth, it's beyond a
Oh
joke.
yeah.
You
Yeah,
know, the fact.
it's not what you don't know that hurts you. It's what you think you know and don't know
Yeah,
that gets you.
yeah,
I don't know
yeah.
who said
They,
that,
oh,
but that's brilliant.
yeah, yeah. It is, because they've been. We've all been taught in a certain way, and they're no different. You
And with
know,
that
I know people.
said, though, I'd like to make a point here. The man on the land movement, a lot of the way people approach the courts, the way the people approach the government, the way they go and maybe make declarations and file it in their counties and things of that nature. Okay, that is the thing. I'd done all those things, and I was involved in a lot of those things, came to an understanding through those things. But then when I said, well, I got to learn for myself so that I could speak about these things, I started to discover a lot of things is a lot different than what I was taught. So the enemy has gotten their fingers into this thing, and of course they get their fingers and make us look like crazies. And they do write-ups on us and tell us to talk about us being the lawbreakers, and we think that statutes are not law, and that's not true. We believe statutes are law as long as it's applied within the jurisdiction that it is written for, and that's the key. People need to understand how they did this by bringing the U.S. Code Title 18. To suppress the people through maritime law. And people are ignorant to that, and we need to educate people in that. And again, we need to bring the administrations. We're looking for four individuals for every county in America. So people need to step up and take these positions, and they need to become educated to do so. And it's not a difficult thing. This is not rocket science, as a matter of fact, and
No.
it's not legalese that's boring and puts you to sleep. You know, a lot of people have given me books and different things to read about how this works and that way, and I can't read. I fall asleep. So we went back to the nuts and bolts, the interesting things, the fascinating things, the things that we really were built upon, okay, as a nation. And so people need to come. They need to get educated. But we also need to take control of our schools. We need to get the Constitution taught in our schools, civics core taught in our schools. And this we can do by bringing the administrations for the grand juries and the trial juries from every county, four individuals, which are, you know, they are the investigative body for the people, to open the doors for the people to investigate any office they want, any individual, fix any problem, and so on. And a lot of this could be done without going through necessarily an indictment and sending them into the court. You know, if the administrators can't fix the problem with some phone calls or visiting an office or empowering people to visit the office to discover the problem and fix it, if they can't fix it, then they bring the grand jury in. And the grand jury, you know, they have the opportunity not only to indict, but they can try to fix the problem, restore the situation without sending it into the courts, and even pay restitution, have restitution be paid by the violator to the person who was violated in order to fix the problem. It doesn't necessarily have to go into the court. But of course, and they need to understand that that's part of the grand jury's job. If you go read the Magna Carta, that you'll read about this, the 25, if they'll send out four to restore, to fix and bring back whatever is necessary to bring that person back to restoration. And if they can't do it, then the four will go to the 25 and the 25 will force it through. And how do they force it through? They indict and send them into a court and they're tried by a jury and a jury decides. Again, back to the people. You can't take a person and imprison them or fine them in any way, shape, or form without the approval of the people. And that's where the grand jury comes in. So we need to tie the administrations in these counties. And again, we need four people for every county. So people need to step up. And you don't have to work in the county you live in. You know, it's a job. But people need to step up. They need to get educated and step up. Then we need to tie those groups, the administrations, in with the county committeemen. Now, for instance, where I live in Dutchess County, there's 249 committeemen. That means there's 249 election districts. And when you get the committeemen in every election district working with the administrators of the grand jury and the trial juries for the sole purpose to educate, we now can educate every person in this country because we can go right down into the precinct level, right down into the person who's walking the beat, so to speak, to get signatures to put people on the ballot. And these are the people who know the people in their community. And then we can go into the schools and require a good education. And that's something also I'm concerned with because I've seen books, I've heard people talk, they bore me to tears, I go to sleep. I don't even know what they're talking about half the time, nor do I care, because it's just nonsense. We need to get down to the meat and potatoes of things. That's what we need to know. We need to know the Constitution. We need to know the Bill of Rights. We need to know the Magna Carta. We need to know the Declaration of Independence. We need to just understand the process of how the U.S. Codes titles work and what they're used for. We don't need to. You could take one title. There'll be 30,000 pages or 10,000 pages just for one title. I mean, that's an education. If someone wants to get really deep and go to school to learn that part of law and work in that part of law, well, that's up to them to do. But you take someone like a Supreme Court justice, okay, like Kavanaugh, he understands all the bodies of law. So there's an individual well-learned in the process. Now, I understand, the differences of the titles, but I'm not equipped to be able to battle these things in the titles, although you can always go back and reference the law and maybe make a fight, but you have to be somewhat educated in those areas. And that's where we need schools. And we can call them bar schools, but bar meaning what it should mean, bar meaning a level of education, raise the bar type thing. You have to be educated to this bar level in order to get into the game, to represent people, where you'd get a certificate of accomplishment, a diploma, whatever you want to call, not a license, okay, because you could do this without a license. Get a certificate and people could say, hey, this guy's been learned in this part of the law. I'm going to hire him to represent me or work with me or help me or whatever. Okay. But courts of justice is a whole different thing here. It's just another part of the Constitution. And courts of justice must run under natural law, a.k.a. Common law. And if it doesn't, then it's not a court of law. It's not a court of justice, and you will not get justice.
That's what we want. Justice, not just us, which is what we've got now.
Yeah.
You know, the Constitution you mentioned, the problem that we're aware of is there's four different constitutions running around, you know, of and for the United States, you know, and the real organic one we haven't had since 1871. Well, the sovereignty.
Yeah, but
we got to be
careful with that, because it is true. Yeah. It's all in the printing, in my opinion. I've read through the Constitution very, very carefully. You know, if you go to, for instance, which is a good book anyway, but if you go to National Center for Constitutional Studies, it's nccs.com. You can buy these little hand pocket constitutions. But they write it up in the beginning, the Constitution of the United States. Okay, so that word "of" is you know, changes the meaning of what's going on here. But nevertheless, that's the only real problem of the printing of these constitutions that I have found. As far as the rest of the body, it's all there, and it's consistent. Now I have another copy of the Constitution, which is in PDF form, and that does say Constitution for the United States of America. Now, I know we had one of our members who had ordered a lot of books from these people and had some kind of communications with these people, made contact and had a conversation, and told them that they have an error in this book and they should correct it. And he told them they need to change the word "of" to the word "for." And, you know, they acknowledge his conversation, but they never made the change. I don't know why. I think sometimes people are too frightened to be free. And look, if we don't understand and have a knowledge of what's ahead in the road and where we're going, we're going to be afraid to do things. You know, sheriffs don't do the right things because they don't have the knowledge. They're afraid. And I know that because I've had conversations with sheriffs. Gerard had a conversation with this one sheriff. He said, I don't really know. I got to go talk to the lawyers to figure this out because I don't know. You see, he's never been learned. But this is all self-education. But we need to get it back in the schools, and we need to get a proper education, appropriate education, not one that puts the kids to sleep, but one that wakes them up, gives them liberty, and it can empower them as children and as adults. And I find this stuff fascinating. I don't fall asleep when I'm reading this stuff and working on these papers and writing things and searching out to put footnotes in. This is so exciting. But I do fall asleep when I get into a book written by a lawyer trying to tell me about the Constitution. I can't even get past chapter one.
No, this is the problem. Well, that's the definition of legalese babble, and that's exactly what it is. So nobody understands it, including most of the lawyers for the start. They may tell you that they know it, but it's all nonsense. Do you ever see a day, John, where we go back to essentially four laws? You can't injure, harm, steal, or murder.
Right.
And make it all so simple.
It's the law of the heart. God already told us he wrote it in the hearts of men. They know. Even a serial killer knows he's doing wrong. He may still do it, but he knows it's wrong. Why? Because God put it into his heart to have the knowledge of right and wrong. Now, there are people who sear their conscience, their consciousness, or their conscience, and that, but they still know. They still know right from wrong. And thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill. You know, don't injure another. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. I mean, he said, you know, the two basic laws, love God and love your neighbor. And upon this is all the law. So if you do anything that's not in love, but in opposition of love, to injure, then you've done a wrong and you just committed a crime. But the solution to a crime never was and never was meant to be. And in the Bible, you don't find jails. I mean, you do find the Romans that put Paul in jail, for instance. But basically, jails is not part of the process under the Bible. And it shouldn't be here in America. There are reasons for jail. You know, you get someone that murdered someone, you got to incarcerate them. What else? You can't. You got to stop them. But generally speaking, most of the what they call crimes, first of all, there must be an injured party. The two principles, in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. Okay, and the injured party can't be the state. And for every injury, there must be a remedy. Those are the two major principles of common law. And upon that builds all things. If I've been injured and I can prove that I've been injured and I can prove who injured me, restoration or restitution must be applied. That's the job of the jury. The jury doesn't just get to decide who's innocent or guilty. They get also to decide what the remedy is. And forget about fines. All that exists under USCs. That has nothing to do with we the people. If the restitution requires a money, you know, you steal a man's ox, you got to give him back four. That's a biblical principle, okay? There must be a penalty for that and a restitution and bringing the person back to where they were. And in order to do that, it's just not giving back what they was taken, but more because there was stress psychological injury and so on, they have to be restored. So we go to the principles of the Bible, and that's what we need to teach the jury. You got to think it out and figure out. You put yourself in that situation. If you found them guilty of something and the person was injured, well, think, what does it take to really bring that person back? And in many cases, sometimes depending on the crime, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the jury must ask the final question before they may have the final solution. They decide innocent or guilt. Okay, fine. Now, once there's one more decision to be made, and it must always be asked, no matter how evil the person is or not, it must be asked, can we give this person mercy, and how much if so? Okay, that's the final question, because that's part of godliness. It's part of justice. And people, these are simple things. You know, once you say them, people, they know, because it's already written in their hearts. We're just bringing it to the surface. And so people need to really get educated here, to get involved and start, you know, getting into the conversation of justice so that they can apply it in their lives, in their communities, in their election districts, and become part of it. Again, you don't have to run for a committeeman, but sometime in your life, you know, you hear maybe 60, 80, 100 years, sometime in your life you should consider a two-year run. And even if it's when you're retired, whenever. The other thing is people need to respond to the juries. You get called for a grand jury, a trial jury, respond. You know, if you're an entrepreneur and the big business is in the summertime and maybe you're slow in the wintertime and they call you up and you say, hey, look, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and I'm really busy, but you know what? I got a slow month in December or in January or February. I'd love to sit in then. Well, then that people who are putting that together should make a note, call this person up in January when they can serve, okay? And they shouldn't have, depending on serving, for instance, you know, if you serve for a month, maybe you have to come one day a week. If you have to come every day, if it's real busy, like down in New York City, and you'll need a lot of juries going on down there, and if you had to come, you know, to be there every day to listen to decisions, then a week is the maximum a person should be required to sit on a jury. They prolong these people on because, first of all, they do a psychological on them to discover, you know, what's the psychological makeup of these people. Can we control them? What kind of a case can we put them into? And the whole thing is a stacked jury system, whether it's a grand jury or a trial jury. And when they work hard to stack a jury and get a jury that's really doing the will of the state, so it's working with the judge, they're working with the prosecutor, and now you're fighting against not only those two, but you're fighting now against the jury, a person doesn't have a chance in court. The whole thing is stacked against them. We got to stop that nonsense. We got to prevent it. But that's why people spend a long time on a jury. They may sit on a grand jury for 6 months. You know, there's grand juries out in California I've heard about. They're supposed to be good, but I've looked at the structure. I don't see it as being good at all. The foreman's been the same foreman for 2 years and longer, okay? The person before him was longer. You know, with us, you become a foreman on a grand jury. You may stick with it during, like, for instance, let's take National Liberty Alliance, okay? Matter of fact, we're getting ready to move, change foremans. But in any event, the same foreman that may have been there or the same seat that this jury has been sitting on to make decision is all about the same thing, and that's dealing with enemies, both foreign and domestic, against the United States of America. So until we fix the courts, until we fix this political process, until we win this battle and get rid of all of these enemies of the state, which are inside our government and outside, until we get rid of them, we're going to stay on this jury and continue. But once that's done, then the unified United States common law grand jury must dismantle. And then we have to let it flow down to the people within the counties where the crime may be committed for them to deal with, the administrators to prepare the juries in that process in those neighborhoods, and the people coming in within those districts, whether it's a county or federal district. And we don't need federal juries. Wherever the crime is, any county the crime is in, you should have an administration for the juries, and they should be able to call together the people within that county, which is where the crime took place, to take a seat and make a decision, and whether to indict, or if it's a trial jury on, you know, innocent or guilt, to sit on that federal court. That's how a federal jury needs to be pulled. But first off, I can't think of any reason other than, unless you're working for the government and break the codes, but if you're one of the people, I can't think of any reason why the government can apply anything on you. U.S. 18 has no application of law upon any human being because it's no law at all. And the federal government doesn't have the authority to come in and say you can't have a weapon or you can't have this or you can't have that. That's not their business. And they have no power. That's the state's business, and it breaks down into that county. And that's the people's business. They're the ones that decide those things. And, of course, we can't violate a person's unalienable right to be armed if that's what they want. But we could disarm a person who might be dangerous for a period of time or whatever the jury decides, you know?
Yeah. One of the things that's come up is the United States Attorney for Utah, John Huber, was appointed by Trump. We've all been hearing about these 50 to 60,000 sealed indictments. And one of the things, you know, they were calling for a second counsel to replace the Mueller and all that investigation. And John Huber apparently is going to run a grand jury out of Utah. Is this something that will help National Liberty Alliance?
What is,
and
what is
the
John Huber's position? He was what, appointed or something?
He is United States Attorney for
U.S.
Utah.
Attorney. Yeah, look, yeah. A U.S. attorney cannot run a grand jury. A U.S. attorney right. can put a case before a grand jury. The statutes to call a grand jury, matter of fact, in the United States, in the federal district, the power and the authority for a U.S. attorney to call a grand jury wasn't given till I think it was 1979 or 1973, one of those two dates. Before that, they didn't have the power or the authority. They didn't have any statutes, any codes to tell them how to do it or empower them to do it, because that's what they need. They can't just take power. They have to be given that power, and that power must be given by the people through the legislators who write the law to empower the individual in a particular agency or office, okay? And that's how that works. Now, that empowerment came in, only, like I said, in the 70s. Well, how come it wasn't there before? Why wasn't it there before? Well, the reason why it wasn't there before is because U.S. 18 could not be applied as law until they erased from the minds of the people the knowledge of what is law and what isn't. And so now people think that the penal law that sits inside of U.S. 18, Title 18, that they think that that's the law of the land. Nothing could be further from the truth. That's the law of the sea. That's maritime law. But the slaves are ignorant. They can't read and write. They don't know. They can't read the law. Why? Because they've been told that you can't do it without a lawyer. And the lawyer has been taught by the Bar Association. This is a heavy conspiracy that goes right back to the teaching of a conspiracy right in the schools. And why don't these lawyers know this? Why don't they bring it up into the courts? And of course, there's two reasons. Number one, they're lazy. They're into making money, and they're following what they were taught. For those who dig deeper and look deeper into it, they're suppressed by the powers that be. You can't go there, buddy. You don't bring that up in my courtroom. Okay, so therein is the second problem. And then there's the third one, the one who is dealing with the situation, working their way through the system, and potentially maybe becoming an appellate court judge or a judge that's sitting on the United States Supreme Court. And hopefully, you know, you got a good person in office that's going to choose the right people, like Trump. Okay, and those are the people that know the law on a different level and really have been held back, okay, until they sit on an appellate court and sit maybe on to the United States Supreme Court, okay, they're held back, they're restricted, they're prevented, you know, and they're threatened and so on and so forth. And we got to break this barrier, and that's the purpose of our court case, by the way. And we've planned this a long, long time ago. We knew we had to write a case to deal with the judiciary, and we knew that 6 years ago. But we had to build a momentum. We had to build a membership. We had to get people involved. We had to create a unified United States common law grand jury where we have people from every state of the union and a lot, maybe, I don't know, 70% of the counties, maybe more. I don't know. We should take a look into that. But we have people in every state of the union sitting on this grand jury. So we, the people, do have the power and the authority. We're not just a small little group here in New York trying to control things. No, we are the people of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury trying to bring back justice courts. And so that's where we're at right now. That's the battle. We've been working for 6 years to get to this point. We're here. And the timing is beautiful because the education required to write these papers, number one, the ability to make this argument and understand the argument, number two, took all of this time to get to. And of course, we're still learning. Every day we learn and change things. But we're here now, and lo and behold, there's Trump taking down the deep state, replacing Supreme Court judges, bringing in appellate judges, and the whole stage is set. It's time for the people to rise up. It's time for the people to do. Now, as far as this guy John Hubba, if he has any control over the grand jury, it's null and void. It's not a jury. It's statutory. Okay? If he's going to apply statutes to a grand jury to go after individuals outside of the government or the powers and the authorities we gave in certain commercial areas or on the land or on the sea, I mean, outside of that, if he's going after the people, this is not good. Now, if he's going after the people in government and breaking the law and applying codes against them, I'm all for that. But he cannot be the foreman. He cannot control the jury. He's got to produce his case to the jury, and the jury's got to be free and independent, and they have to make the indictment.
Yeah. Well, what the it says, John Huber can convene a grand jury.
That he can do.
Issue subpoenas, collect evidence, and order witnesses to testify. So I think
any U.S. attorney can do that. By the way, that law is out there. Like I said, it came out in the 70s.
But unfortunately, that's why I wanted it cleared up, because people are thinking on the internet he's setting up a grand jury, and he's going to run the grand jury.
No,
and all
they
this
can't
and that.
Do that. No. Now you see, that's where you see, this is why what we're doing at National Liberty Alliance is so important. Without administrators, you know, we need administrators of the grand and trial juries. An administrator is a person ultimately who orientates the jury. They have to be educated enough to be able to write the papers for the jury, making sure they're writing the papers according to the will of the grand jury, making sure that the grand jury isn't abused and being tugged around by a ring in their nose, so to speak, and making sure that the judge isn't trying to control the trial jury. And you see, that's the job of the administrators, to be the investigative body, to make sure that the law is applied, to make sure people take a vow, not just an oath to protect the Constitution and uphold it, but also a vow to God to do the just thing. That's part of what we're building. People need to take the vow to God, not to man, not to a Constitution per se, but you do have to be careful not to, and they need to understand that they cannot violate a person's unalienable rights. And those are simple things, because people really know in the heart most of these things anyway. Once you bring them to surface, that's why they're easy to remember, because it's already in the heart. You bring it to surface, and yeah, that's logical. That's right. Yeah, and you move on. And you don't forget these things, you know. And the longer you stay looking into these things, the more stronger they become part of you as a person, which brings you to justice. And we all need to be brought to justice. We all need to be just people, merciful people. Yeah. But yeah, they cannot control it. And that's where the administrators would be. They'd be there to prevent that from happening. You know, if a prosecutor wanted to talk to the grand jury, okay, well, I would say administrator needs to be in that room, make sure that there's no abuse to that grand jury. We need to run down the law on that prosecutor, make them understand you can only go so far. You don't tell these people what they got to do. Ask them, for what you'd like to do, them to do, because you think that this is a crime or something. Now, when the people want to come into the grand jury and talk to the jury, then I don't think the administrators should be in that room. That should be just between the jury and the individuals that want to bring a case or some thoughts and ideas to the jury. You can't record them. You can't listen in on them. Now, they will come to certain solutions and conclusions, okay, and then we'd be there, for the administrators would be there to advise them, and there'd be a structure up for educational wise to, if you don't have an answer, we'll find the answers for you. That's where National Liberty Alliance will come in. But you have to find the answers that are lawful, that are just, that are merciful, that ultimately, just is the key word here, that are just. And if the jury is going to do something that's going to, step upon someone's unalienable rights, then it's up to the administration to let it be known. After all, for the final words of the grand jury, it has to be written up. And you'll need somebody there that knows to understand how to write. And it's very simple, really. But the format of writing up that paperwork. Okay, so you write it up according to the will of the jury. And if you see that the jury is violating someone's unalienable right by what it is that they're doing, then you have to bring it to their attention. They have to go back and rethink this and figure out what they want to do and how they want to do it without violating someone's unalienable rights. Matter of fact, the only way or only time that the United States Supreme Court can intervene into a jury, grand jury decision or a trial jury decision, the only way is if someone else's unalienable rights are being violated through the process and determinations of whatever it is that they're deciding. And that's the only way. Other than that, they don't have the power or the authority. They cannot overturn a jury. This idea of appealing something that a trial jury has made is not possible. But it can be appealed to be looked at to see if some unalienable rights of people have been violated, and that could be fixed and adjusted. But other than that, there is no appeal from a grand jury's from a trial jury's decision. It's over. There's also no appeal from a grand jury's decision. These prosecutors don't have the power or the authority to go talk to the person that's been indicted and say, hey, look, you're going to get 50 years, but we can work it out. We'll give you 3 years, and, you just do this, that, or the other thing. Plead to this. No, that's not the – that's the trial – the grand jury has that power, but the prosecutors do not have that power. That's violating the law, okay? They cannot do that. They can't – and they do all the time. They add charges. After they get the indictment, they add charges later on. Wait, you got to come back to the jury to add those charges. I've seen cases or heard of cases, shall I say, where the charges came up as this, and by the time they went to court, totally different charges, okay? What is that about? Yeah. That's unlawful. It's not just. Those people need to go to jail.
Yeah, well, that's just the problem. They've become a law unto themselves.
Yep. That's what the Bible tells us, huh?
Yeah. Is Gerard and Carl still there?
Carl, yeah, I'm still
kind
here.
Kind of forgot.
No, it's all right.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. No, I'm just.
How are you seeing things going forward with National Liberty Alliance, Carl?
Well, I think going forward, I'm very excited. We have a lot of good things here, and I think the one thing to encourage people to join is you don't even need to really get to know the law. I mean, if you have technical skills, like for me, I don't really get into any of the paperwork or any of that, but I help with the website. But some people might be very good in sort of a secretary position, right? Mm-hmm. And we're looking for somebody to help with that, with John. So, if you have those skills, come on. If you're just good at calling people and talking to people, that's what we like to get to. So there is something for anybody to do with any sort of level of skill. And I would just really encourage people to just consider that and, to use their talents that they're good at as well.
Yeah, we have committees, and we have the welcoming committee. We're bringing together some people to help us with forms and paperwork that are paralegals. And we have a few other committees. And if people have an idea of a committee that where we can do a good somewhere and bring the committee together and work towards a point, all they have to do is bring it up to the national leadership, let them discuss it and see if it's something that's appropriate. And then Gerard and myself would look at it to make sure that it works, that it works with what we're doing. And as long as it passes those tests, then you know, we can build any kind of a committee to do anything. We have a committee that works with the court systems, for instance. What's that committee called? Do you remember? Courtroom Observers. That's it.
Oh yes, we have that. We have the Natural Healing Committees, and we have a couple others.
Right.
Yeah,
so, and the natural healing committees are very important because they come together and discuss natural healing, and if all those things are recorded, people can go back and listen to the tapes of the older ones. But it helps people to get healthy naturally and the way it should be, instead of doing the pharmaceuticals and killing yourself, because that's what people are doing when they take those pharmaceuticals. And of course, if there's no way to make money on it, they don't want it to become lawful. I know the cannabis problem or situation where the oils that they're putting out there for, they do through the vapors. I heard that the federal government is trying to move and empower the control of that through the pharmaceutical companies. And you know what's going to happen there, you know, something that costs a penny, we're going to pay $100 for. Because that's where it's at. Natural things are free. They're already there. You can go grow it or pick it yourself. It could be bought very cheaply. But these people, once they get their hands on it, it becomes a money thing. But we're going to take those people down, I think, anyway, and that won't be a problem in the future, unless the people don't step up and take power. And they have to become educated to do so. So, yeah, there's a little work to it. There's a little pain to it. I don't see it as pain, but there's work to it. I see it as enjoyment. I enjoy reading this stuff and working through history and working through the common law processes and even the process of the courts. I find it fascinating. So if people are if people are educated in those areas and they want to participate with us, we need them. But the big thing we need is people willing to become educated, involved on the grassroots level, and taking a job or supporting people to take a job within their county to become the administrators of the juries. If we the people don't take control of the administration of the juries, they're only going back to where we're going to be, the fox in charge of the hen house, and we'll be back here again maybe in 50 years.
Yeah, and another thing to add on to that, too, is one of the biggest problems we get is we have people who want to go out there and are excited at first, but then they realize it's kind of difficult work, and then they fall off. And to that, you know, it's, you know, as all of us here in National Leadership, you know, there's always been a little bit of, you know, you want to quit, but, you know, you just have to keep going because it's that important. And really, you know, we're looking for people who are motivated, people who, you know, can go overcome that sort of tough challenge and, you know, and really lead with us.
And even if they only want to put an hour a week into it, that's
good. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, we don't care. Exactly. Look, even if you say, I only got an hour a month, hey, you get 1,000 people with an hour a month, that's 1,000 hours a month, okay, of work that could be done. So, you know, some people are so busy, but maybe they got deep pockets. You know, we need money. Anybody that can donate money for the cause. We've got a program we're working on to get the sheriffs educated. We've written a book. You can get a copy of this book, which I got to update because I've learned some things that we have to make some changes and even add to that booklet. But we have a book called The Sheriff's Handbook, and you can get a PDF copy of that on our website. You'll find it on our front page. We want to put that into pocket handbooks, and we've worked out the cost. It's going to be about $60,000, $54,000, $55,000, somewhere around there. And in order to get the books, you know, printed off and then mailed out 20 to each sheriff in America, there's 3,143 counties. So there's about 3,100 sheriffs out there. So we figure if we can get 20 handbooks into the hands of all these sheriffs, and they can give them out to the deputies, and in some cases they'll ask for more in the bigger places, and we'll send them more. But that project's going to cost us about $55,000-$60,000. So we need people that, and we're living off the widow's mite. We ask everyone to donate $5 a month. That's $60 a year. That's all we're asking for at a bare minimum. As a matter of fact, our courses are free. You can join a membership and you don't have to donate. But the new course coming up, we're putting a lot of work into it, and we need to raise money, not only to support National Liberty Alliance, but to get involved in the projects that we're doing, to be able to support them. In order to get into that third course, you must be a donating member of $5 a month or more. And that's not every – look, at $5 a month is giving up a donut and a coffee or a bagel and a coffee once a month. That's all it is. And everyone can afford $5 a month. We go out and waste money buying stupid things for our kids, like some of these video games. They spend 80, 90, 100 bucks for them. The controllers are 150. That is ridiculous monies. But people are spending that for their children. Well, what about for their future? Give National Liberty Alliance $5 a month for the future of your children, to educate your children, to secure liberty for your children and yourself. You know, so let's do that. But we also are setting up a process. There are people who are on a very tight budget, maybe on Social Security. They're making the minimum. They're barely surviving. They're hardly eating. And they can't afford it, but they want the education. So anybody who really can't afford the $5 a month or more, and there are some people who can't afford $5 a month or more, but that's very minimum. If they can't afford it, all you have to do is get a hold of the national leader, Jan. You'll find his name and number on the under the directory on nationalliberty.org. Just let them know you want to take the course, but you're on a limited budget. You just don't have the money. We'll flip the switch to get you in. So we will still let people in that aren't given. But look it. And if people can give 100 bucks a month, give us 100. We need the money. We need to survive. We need to keep the lights on. We file a lot of papers. You know, this court case coming up right now, you know, we did take a donation drive for this. One person threw up 5,000, which was about enough to really take this court case through the system in the federal courts. If you were to get lawyers to do this, they'd come in with an army of lawyers. It would probably cost you $500,000 to get what the case would take and into the courts. We're doing it for $5,000, okay, which is covering papers and mailings and response on papers, certifying papers. You know, that's where the cover cost is, and that's it. If there's anything left over on that, it goes right back into the kitty to support National Liberty Alliance. Same thing with the sheriff's program. We've collected about $14,000 already on that. And but again, you know, we had a couple of people with deep pockets that helped us out on that. If we collect more than $50,000-$60,000 or whatever is required to do the books, the money's going to go back into continuing the work that we're doing, the work in the courts, the work in education, the work in keeping the website up. We want to get a more sophisticated website eventually in the future. I mean, a really serious, sophisticated website in the future. But again, we need to have the money to do those things. And so anybody with some deep pockets or anybody that can give us $5 a month, join up and give it to us. You know, you don't even have to join to do it. Just go out and give it anyway. But everyone should become a member so that they can take the courses.
Yep. I agree. We'll probably, unless you've got something else to add, we're probably going to wrap up now. One thing I'd like to say, and perhaps you could touch on, you know, a lot of people, well, most of us really, are frightened by courts and fear of all not understanding the legal system or the law system. And, you know, you meant something that Carl touched on earlier. You know, you're not expecting everyone to come in and absorb all of the law and all the regulations and statutes. It's going to require all people of all levels. So, you know, I think it's important to stress that, you know, you're not setting the bar extremely high for entry.
Right.
You
know, yeah, there is a minimum knowledge that people should know, and it's not really that involved to get to know this. I mean, in no time at all, really, probably in a month's time, you can understand everything you need to know just as a person, okay?
Yeah.
As one of the people to be able to vote good and to be able to do certain things, and you can consent to your government and so on. But yeah, for those who want to get deeper and deeper, there's a higher education, higher education, higher education. You know, our welcome committee, the two individuals we got working on that, on a welcoming committee, they understand at first they were pushing the bar too high. And I spoke with them, with a few other leaders, and said, you got to do something a little less than that. You know, you can offer the higher education, but show show the people what the minimum things are necessary. So we need a lot of help with the welcoming committee so that we can show the people where it is that they need to go, depending on how much time they want involved or what's the minimum amount of knowledge that they should have. But we get back to Jefferson. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. But the key thing here, you know, what we need to understand, it really doesn't get any more difficult than this, and that's found in the preamble of the Constitution. Where it says, we the people, I want to read this, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, okay? That's where it first starts, forming a perfect union. That forming of that perfect union was right here in the writing of this Constitution, bringing us together. Many countries, we call them states, so they can be called countries. They become one nation and have a federal government, not to control us, but only to work to help us to work as a whole, a United States, controlled by the senators, ultimately, of the states, which, again, the 17th Amendment destroyed that balance of power. But there are six prime directives. The purpose is to form a more perfect union, okay, to establish justice, okay, to ensure domestic tranquility, to provide for the common defense, to promote the general welfare, and to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And this is what we did ordain and establish in this Constitution for the United States of America. That is the prime directive. Anything that Congress does, anything that the courts do, anything that the President of the United States and the agencies that he has control over does, must fall into fulfilling one of these prime directives. It's got to be there for establishing justice. It's got to be there for ensuring the domestic tranquility or provide for the general welfare or to protect the blessings of liberty. If it's not doing one of those six things, then it shouldn't be doing anything, okay? It must uphold one of those things. That's the purpose of federal government, and it's not to go beyond that. And again, we define the laws and the power of writing laws, shall I say, to the legislators in Article 1, Section 8, 17 powers plus the power to write law, 18 powers altogether. And they cannot act outside of that. Are they acting outside of that? Yes. And how come the people aren't doing anything? Because they don't know. They don't know what powers they have and what powers they shouldn't have. Well, that's what we're trying to bring to the people. This is the knowledge you must have as a person. And every child coming out of grammar school should have the full knowledge necessary to be able to walk into any court of law and defend themselves and to understand the government and how it works. This is not complicated stuff. It's exciting. It's empowering.
Yes, absolutely. Final words, Carl?
Just to go to nationallibertyalliance.org and check us out. And also, too, we have the vote on Monday as well. So right.
And anybody's invited to that, by the way.
Yeah, and that's an open invite to anybody. You don't have to be a member to come to that. But the details of that call are on our site in the weekly call section.
Right. We're making a decision on an indictment. So anybody who wants to sit in to put their vote towards an indictment or nay, not towards it, should have sit in. And it's a simple thing. You know, the papers we're writing and filing in the courts, we're not going to permit them to take control of this court case. And anybody who interferes with the justice that we're trying to bring through these courts, that are by the people and for the people, not by judges and not by prosecutors, they need to step aside and we need to apply these things and take control of our courts. Anybody that gets in the way of that, we want the grand jury to decide automatically that we'll be able to just write an indictment on this judge, that prosecutor, that clerk, anybody. It just is automatic. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to be asking for, the ability for indictment or anyone that sticks their foot or closes the door, prevents us from access.
Right. And that will be Monday at 8:30 Eastern time. Yep. And that's all.
Yeah, you could find that on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. On the top left side, right above the blue bar, you'll see weekly call. If you click on that, that'll give you the information. You can come in by browser using your speaker and your mic, or you can come in by telephone. You can come in through Skype. There's also a browser connection you could make that gets you into the call. So there's a lot of ways to get in, but that gives you all the instructions on how to get in. And it'll be a very quick meeting. I'm not expecting it to last maybe any more than 5, 10, 15 minutes max. And then after that, we have our 9 o'clock call, which we have every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard. It goes for 3 hours, where we have an open forum. We usually teach something. We have an author that comes there, Brent Winters, author of The Excellence of the Common Law, one of the best books I've ever read in law. And he comes and speaks and teaches maybe for 20 minutes to a half hour every week also. And then we have open forums. People can ask questions, make comments, and so on. So join us.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much, both Carl and John.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
I really enjoyed it, and hopefully the listeners will get much out of it. And we wish you all the success going forward, and if we can help, we'll certainly be doing that. And any time you need to do an update, just message me and we can move forward.
Thank you.
That
appreciate
sounds
it.
Good.
Godspeed to you and all. Thank you.
And one final thing I need to say before we go. Is Gerard doing okay? He obviously had an unfortunate incident recently.
Yeah, he's little by little. He's still struggling, and that's probably why he wasn't with us tonight. You know, it's still a lot of pressure on him trying to make ends meet with the fire that he had out there in his garage. And he's lost everything, his entire business and tools and the structure. But we're trying to rebuild it, and a lot of people are helping, and anybody that can help out there would be appreciated. If you want to help him, get a hold of our national leader, Jan, under directory, and he can tell you how you can help Gerard out. So.
Good. Thank you. Right. Well, this has been the Truth, Honor, and Integrity Show with the National Liberty Alliance, John DeRash and Carl Appel. Bye for now.